Hello, hi, Eileen. Hey there. Let's see if I can unmute you. All right. Hey, Eileen, I just unmuted you. Are you there?
I am here. Hi, how are you?
Hi, I'm great. I was reading over your
Good.
stuff. I am trying to figure out really quickly if my blue snowball microphone is the one that is inputting, or if it is the other, like the headphone thing I have in here. So I don't know.
Love the image of the blue snowball. That's kind of cool.
It's so retro looking and cool. I love this thing.
I
Well,
love
it says that it is on because there's a red light, so I assume that it is using the microphone, but I wanted to put my headphones on too so I could just hear everybody better and whatever. So, oh my gosh, I'm so enjoying reading your stuff. I knew I would.
Oh, good.
Oh, you did a fantastic job with your competitive analysis. I know that's tough with the circus part, like you said, but
Is.
yes.
Oh, good. I'm glad. I follow a lot of people, and I really tried to narrow it down to the folks who are actually, offering anything similar. There are a couple of other folks that I admire, but they seem to be really trying to get people to become professional speakers. And that's not my end goal. For my audience necessarily, unless that's what they want to do. And I forgot something really key in the circus, which is quality content.
Oh, there we go.
I just sort of assumed that, and then I realized about a minute ago, I was like, oh, right, yeah, one of the things that is troubling to me is that there be substance to the content.
Yes,
So.
yes. Good point, good point. So I see Kim has just sent in her homework, and I am just checking to see if she's on with us yet. Not yet. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, no, I think you're right. You better add that
Okay.
in. And so what's interesting about the circus analysis that you did is, it's just a lot of you put raise, 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 raise. So it's sort of
Yeah.
like you just have to go bigger and be bigger on a
Yep.
lot of those things. But you didn't find that there was any of it that you could flip, I guess, because they're also positive, I think.
Yeah, I think, what makes a circus, it's like I wasn't even sure like how I could like for instance, time investment is something that occurs to me right now. And all of those things take time, and so but you can't really eliminate that because that's part of I think that's part of what's different about what I'm really trying to do is that there's enough out there that's really glib and lightweight and people publishing just for volume. So that's why I tried to fill in some boxes, but I definitely welcome your input because all of these pieces are, it's important in building the foundation. So I welcome your insight on that as well.
Okay, terrific.
Hello.
Oh,
Hi,
hi, Kim. How are you?
Kim.
Oh, I'm good. How are you all?
Yeah,
I'm doing great. I just got your stuff, so I just got both of your homeworks, shortly before the thing. So, obviously, the sooner in advance of the thing that you can send it to me, the more I have time to review it. So I haven't been able to read all of what you sent me. So we'll just be going over that while we're together. I hope you don't mind that. So, glad you're here. How are you feeling? Are you rested up?
No, but I'm going anyway.
Oh, but you're finished with the project, so you don't have to go back over there or anything?
Well, I had to go over last night and deal with the estate sale people and the other owner, and I have to go today and get a key and drop it off, and I'm getting calls from the move manager that's trying to help her move in. We can't find this, we can't find that. So I imagine that will be going on for a while, but the main part of it is complete, and now I just have to get all the administrative part of it completed. So
okay,
all good. I'm just you know, just lots to do.
Yes, indeed. Well, I'm glad you could be with us live today, and we're gonna just take it, I guess, systematically here, because I'm just gonna be going down what you sent me and answering your questions, and I guess I'm gonna go to Eileen. I mean, I've got your documents open here. And then I know you had other questions that you added on, so I want to just hit those first because they're not pertaining to the documents necessarily. So,
right.
So let's just jump right in. So you said, what should I focus on first to generate income? Do I start with building my audience, offering coaching, or writing more? So that brings me to the topic of what is our next training, which is Tuesday. It's about products. So we're going to jump right into that next. And this stuff we've been doing is foundational. And then the next thing I want you guys to be thinking about, obviously, is the offering that you're going to have meat in, you know, that is compelling for people. So showing you what all the options are, how to create that the easiest way, and even how to name those things and how to deal with your graphic designer on, you know, creating whatever needs to happen for those products to be created. Oh, there's Kim. Hey, I see you.
Oh, I can see you too. I don't know if you don't want the video, I can turn it off, but I always think it's cool if you can see people as well as hear them.
Yeah, that's terrific. Well, if you want me to, I'll put the camera on. I was going to, let me see. And what I have is, I'm also, you're sharing your screen, so you might not want to share your screen, I guess, unless you need to, because I can see your computer right now. I'm not sure.
Oh.
I think maybe you might have hit share screen when you were just trying to turn the video webcam on yourself.
I just paused my screen sharing. I'm not quite sure how to do that. But did that help?
Yeah, there should be a little thing that says stop share also. I don't know if I can do. Yeah, there we go. Okay.
Oh, that's better. Great. Yeah.
Look at you. You look beautiful.
Oh, hi.
Well, since you're doing video, I'll do video. I know that when you get too many people on, since it's just three of us, we can do video. But it does use up bandwidth. See, I've got this big microphone in front of my face. So.
Oh, that is big and retro. That's cool.
So here's the little pop screen thing.
You said it was called something. I can't remember what
it was. It's called the Blue Snowball. So the brand is blue, so it's not actually the color blue. I'm sure that you probably get that if you wanted to. But yeah, the pop screen keeps it from recording what they call plosives, which are P's and B's. I've done a lot of training on voiceover work, so that's where I learned some of this. But with the video, it's in front of my face, so I feel like I should just turn it off. It's really good to see you though, Kim, and it's fun to know what each other look like. Okay, cool. I'm going to turn it off because I just feel like this thing's in front of me here. Okay, excellent. So what you were asking the question about the offerings, right? So do I start with building my audience, offering coaching, or writing more? And then you explained what you were saying. So you're working on a TV script, and you've got also the idea of coaching, and you write the blog posts. You mentioned that you have an inconsistent blog publishing schedule. And also you mentioned, and I don't even know if that was in this paragraph, but somewhere else, but you were talking about how much time it takes you to write a blog post in this other part of it.
Yes.
And I would love to encourage you to force yourself to use less time on that. I know that it's a creative outlet for you, and you do a great job. Obviously, I love to read what you write.
Thanks.
Take a little bit of inspiration from Seth Godin. Have you ever looked at his stuff?
Yeah, not deeply, but man, he comes up a lot in my life lately. So I think I need to spend some time with him.
Well, go to his blog, and he's one of the most well-known writers and bloggers. He's one of the most prolific writers I've ever heard of. And what he does is he writes every single day, and he's never missed a day for years. And to write every single day, you can't write very much. And so he's learned to be very pithy and brief and succinct. And if you go and just read his blog for a couple of weeks back, they're short, you know, very choppy sentences, but they flow nicely. And it's such an inspiration. He is my writing inspiration because he's so disciplined and he's so succinct. And he just punches you, you know, like, oh my gosh, what a great point, you know. So get inspired by that, because what I'd like to see you do is write more things that are shorter and that will not require so much of your time and still give you the discipline and exercise of being a writer, because that is important if you're going the direction you're going.
Can I insert a comment or a thought that might lead to a question here?
Yeah, of course.
When I started blogging a few years back, my webmaster SEO guy kept telling me all these rules about, you know, Google this and that. And he said, now they're looking at longer content. Before it couldn't be any more than 400 words. And now they're looking at 400 to 600. And one of the things that's just confused the heck out of me about blogging is keywords and length of the article and all that kind of stuff. So I don't know. And then, you know, lately I've heard like, well, blogging isn't as important as blah, blah, this or blah, blah, that. It gets very confusing. I mean, what have you run across that? And if so, do you just ignore it all? Or
thank you, because that's a beautiful expansion of the question. And it is leading me exactly where I was going with this, which is you've got to ask yourself, backing way up, why are you even doing this, right? So not everybody needs to blog. And I think that Eileen does, because she's a writer, and this is like the bulk of what she is giving to the world is her expression through writing. And for people to get a sense of her, she does need to write blog posts. Not everybody does anymore. And as far as the length, 300 to 500 words is just a really nice amount, you know, and there's always going to be changes to Google's algorithms. Seth Godin doesn't write anywhere near 300 to 500 words, and he's one of the most successful people in the world. So those rules are sort of nice to know, but really it's what matters is what you're needing to do for your business, you know? So, you know, what is digestible for people is one question, you know, can people sit and read it in a nice little chunk of time where they can sit with their coffee and go, yep, read her today, read him today, did that, you know? It's got to be a reasonable time commitment for the person to digest. The other thing is that, you know, you've got to look at the overall purpose of your business. So again, Eileen, yes, you should be blogging. I don't know that you need to do it, Kim, because it depends on what for. Like if you're doing it for traffic reasons, there's other ways to get traffic nowadays. There's,
I think have relevant content on my website and be seen as an expert and just as part of the whole branding, you know, the business of branding is what I've been told that, you know, you have to blog, you have to blog, you have to blog. You also have to video, you have to video, you have to video. So I don't know
that that's necessarily true, but go ahead, Eileen.
Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me. there's a blogger that I follow who, I mean, he's parlayed his blog into, you know, like a 7-figure business, just with writing. And, that's not what I want to do because I'm, you know, it's not my sole vehicle, but yeah, it's foundational to me. And someone was asking him about like the need and the frequency and, you know, and how to get heard in the blogosphere. The internet's a pretty noisy place. And and so he was saying that that it used to be that people blogged every day more. And by the way, he's also an admirer of Seth Godin and I think is friends with him. So he's aware of that style. But then he was also saying that some people are cutting back and doing like more epic blog posts where they're like, you know, three times as long as that standard, 500 or 800. And so it seems like, you know, it varies. I love the idea of it being a reasonable time commitment and digestible. And so some of mine have been shorter. Some of the last few have been much, much longer because, you know, it's a story. Mm-hmm. But I've been thinking about, like, how could I maybe break those into more stories but shorter, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, how could I, you know, do like a part one and part two or something? I'm not really sure, but I'm really taking the point of it, of it being a reasonable time commitment for the reader, and just also just really aware of, you know, what value is it bringing to the reader? Because there is a lot of blogging just sort of for the purpose of, you know, grinding it out there. And I worked on a large corporate blog for a while, mm-hmm. and there were just all kinds of things where certain business groups were like, we just have to get it out here because it's so important, and no one would read it. And it's, you know, so it really just, it seems to depend so much. But of course, this is a totally different thing that I'm doing than what I was doing there. But it's just the idea of considering the audience, you know?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And so there's an old adage, of course, that work expands to fill the time allotted. So one of the things I wanted to suggest to you is to give yourself a time limit every day, because mm-hmm. what I'm concerned about is if it's taking you mm-hmm. as long as you express that you were taking to write one blog post, mm-hmm. it's so easy to confuse activity with accomplishment. Mm-hmm. And what we need to focus on for you, or for everyone who's in this program, we need to focus on what are revenue generating activities. And ultimately, everything we're doing leads to revenue in indirect mm-hmm. ways and things like that. But I think right now, especially, we need to think about creating sellable offerings for you. And blog posting is mm-hmm. part of what builds, it's going to build up your brand and build up the bulk of who you show up as out there. But, mm-hmm. And it's important, but it's not a revenue generator. So,
right.
Does that make sense to you to kind of back off on the amount of yeah. time and try to, and you know what else, that whole thing of work expanding to fill the time allotted, it does force you to get it done quickly. You know, it's like if someone had a proverbial gun to your head, could you do it in an hour?
Yeah,
yeah, you could.
I tried to go on your website and I think I probably spelled it wrong. So.
Oh, that happens.
You could put it in the chat, Arlene.
I will.
You could click on it.
S-P-A-R.
That's exactly what I'll
do. Yeah, this is.
I'll put it in the chat right now.
Good.
Let me get to my. I'm just going to copy it so that I make sure that I don't misspell it, because it's kind of a mouthful.
I feel kind of like I want to see this. I feel like I'm out of the loop on this, and I can't.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your enthusiasm about that for sure. I really do. And gosh darn it, every time I leave this window, I probably am logged into this webinar like three times now for some reason. It keeps taking me elsewhere. So here I go with chat.
Maybe if I type something in the chat, it'll like
here we go.
There we go.
Did that happen?
It did.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, okay.
Oh, it's an N. I had an M where there should be an N. That's what it was. Okay.
So we're going to talk about, you know, when we discuss products and naming and all that stuff, we're going to talk about this mm-hmm. very issue, which is,
okay.
is your domain name easy to remember and spell and yeah. type and all of that? And so you can have yeah. the coolest name in the world and it's still cool, but we might want to do a different domain name for people to just get to you quickly. One of the things that happens is you'll do a radio interview or something and someone's in their car. So everything you do, you have to think about, there's this person in their car and they're listening to this. They can't write it down. How are they going to remember this and spell it later? So we're probably going to end up having some other place for them to go that's easy to remember. So stepping back a level on all the things you just turned in and all the questions that you have, just to kind of preface everything as we start this journey together, you know, we're not going to have all the answers today. We're going to, that's why we have 8 weeks together, and that's why we're spending this kind of time together in a concentrated way, so that we can, you know, stir it all up in the pot and let it simmer, and, you know, whatever the metaphor is, but like when we serve the soup, you know, we're going to know, like, it's going to be right at the end. So we're going to have some of these answers in different weeks, and some of these things are going to evolve together over time as I digest everything, and I hope that makes sense. So some of these answers will come to us, and I'm very confident about that. So, but yeah, let's talk about, you know, in general, yes, we're going to cover products on Tuesday, but you asked me a few more questions, so I want to hit those because they may help a little bit too. So the other question you sent me was, does coaching require credentials or a contract? Two different questions really, but credentials, yes and no. Like, anybody really can say that they're a coach, and it's okay. Mm-hmm. There's not a law against that. There will be some clients that will ask you what kind of training you've had, and that would be a nice thing to answer affirmatively to make them feel more confident in hiring you. Then at a certain point in your career, when people know that you're a successful coach, they don't really care anymore. So it's sometimes credentials are one of those things that help when you're just getting started, and it just sort of gives you that credibility badge that you need. I also think it gives you confidence in yourself to move forward. And I did some coaching training that was very simple. And it was an online course kind of thing, actually two different things that I did. So it gave me confidence because I thought, well, I kind of know how to do this and I've been doing it for 17 years, but I also wanted to say that I had studied it, and you know what, it was very validating and just saying, yeah, you do know how to do this. But, you know, just giving you some kind of structure to follow with people, and that kind of thing can be helpful, and a little bit of around the business of it and whatnot.
That's a really good question. I had wondered that too, and especially since I find was my target, well, especially with the people who the institutions and the companies I work with, credentialing seems to be important.
Mm-hmm. Do you have credentialing, Kim, with the NASM?
Yeah, I'm a member of NASM, and I could go a step further if I want to give them money and get or accredited or certified or whatever that is. I'm at that stage now. You have to be involved in the business for a while to do that, but I'm at that stage. And, you know, when I was a realtor, I completed my GRI and my SRES and my EPRO and had those little alphabet soups behind me.
Mm-hmm.
But I personally am not as big a believer in credentials, because people can go, you know, those who do not cannot do teach has always been so it's not as big a deal to me. But with older clientele or with institutions that are referring you, they feel like it's important. It is a, you know, it's a CYA type of thing. So it really depends, I think, on your audience that, you know, what's needed. But I've been thinking about that too, that I'd like to go just get a basic coaching certification thing. And I was thinking it would help me, because we do coaching, help me in working with clients and in developing my online stuff.
Yes.
Just to say, you know, yes, I'm a certified coach or whatever. I don't know what's involved in it, but.
Well, I can send you guys a link to a couple of places where I've worked with these people, and I'm going to have to look that up and get back to you on that. So I'll just write that down because I don't want to take time looking it up right now. But there are a couple of places that you can do that, and it's very good basic training. You know, one of them is a guy called Christian Michelson, so that's easy to tell you. And he has what's this thing called? I'll send it to you. But, you know, that's good. And the thing about credentialing, though, is, yeah, number one, it depends on the industry. But it's about confidence. It's about confidence for you. It's about confidence for the people hiring you. And in our expert, author, speaker, change agent kind of world that we're living in here, so much of what we do has to do with positioning, which is why we started with that this week. Positioning and, you know, the confidence that you have stepping across the fishbowl line into that leadership role and owning it. It's so much about your demeanor, you know? It's like if you go online and you see someone and they're like, yep, here I am, I'm confident, I have this demeanor of authority, there's a trust that just exudes from that person just because they feel that way about themselves. And that's a person you're less likely to ask them for credentials because they just seem like they've got their act together, you know? And then, of course, yes, there's going to be industries where you have to have it. Like real estate, you can't practice without a license. I mean, there's obvious things like that.
Right.
But like right now, in my industry, we have a CPO, Certified Professional Organizer. I was in the inaugural class of that years ago when they first started offering that certification. And it's up for renewal. And you know what? I'm not renewing it because I'm confident in my industry. I'm like, look me up. You know, if you don't think I know what I'm talking about, I don't need those letters behind my name. I don't need to pay for them to give me those letters anymore. So you have to do that little dance of establishing your credibility to the point where you don't feel you need it and you can command the, you know, the respect from it. So I just think, you know, for coaching, it's better just for you to have the confidence in yourself. And I think there's some structure there that's important. Let me just give you Christian Michelson's stuff real quick. This is fairly inexpensive, but anyway.
One quick question on that. I saw, and actually I mentioned this person when I was talking about the various, you know, product offerings, but there's a guy that I follow who I like a lot, and he does I guess it's kind of coaching. It's just basically one-on-one sessions with him, which he doesn't offer anymore because now he's starting like a radio program and he wants to reach more people with, you know, fewer appointments basically. I was looking at his stuff and his, it's like, there's an agreement there that there's no, basically it's like there's no liability and, you know, he's not giving medical or financial advice and this website is for entertainment purposes only, which of course it's not. I mean, it's, mm-hmm. it's for, you know, spiritual seekers of all kinds and that, you know, there's some really valuable stuff there. So, but it was like, I guess you could put a disclaimer like that, but to me it sort of, it doesn't diminish him in my eyes, but I could see where, you know, putting something like that would diminish to me, it's just like, it sort of invalidates everything that you're trying to do. And then me as sort of a reluctant coach, it's like, I would hesitate to even call myself a coach. Like I've been racking my brain to think of other words I could use besides that, because in one place I've just come right out and said, this is not what I do. You know, take my advice. I'm not using it. You know, I'm not a life coach. But then, you know, Lori, you and I were talking about like having that available for people who do want to reach out, and I can't really give that time away for free. So how do you, it's sort of this balance. And if this is like out of bounds and something that we're going to talk about down the road, I don't want to hijack the call with that, but
I just do believe, and so Kim, Eileen and I talked about this on our first phone call together, I think that people are going to demand to have coaching with her. They're going to want to talk to her because they're read her stuff. Don't you think so?
They're going to want to talk to her?
Yes. I mean, she's positioning herself as a change agent, right? So I'm looking at your mission statement that you wrote, and I love what you came up with at the end. My mission is to inspire people who have the willingness to change to also have the courage and stamina to create a life they love. I love that. But as so many experts, authors, and speakers are, we're change agents. And so when someone's trying to go through a change, yeah, they're trying to summon that courage and stamina, and they need help. And so they may want to have a more high touch experience with you. So yes, you'll have online programs and they can watch your videos and all the things that you're going to create. But at some point, somebody is going to want in your hourglass of offerings to be able to actually speak to you, and they want to tell you their story, and they're going to have this perception that you're the answer to their problem, you know, which you want them to have. So I think getting some basic coaching skills is good. And, you know, I can just, you know what, let me write that down. I'm just going to tell you, this is, okay, this is awesome. I love this. I want to customize this content for you guys. So here's what I'm going to do. I bought the Christian Michelson program. I just chatted it to you. I bought his program and I went through all the stuff. And I can sum that up for you. And I'm not trying to steal his content, but what I'm saying is there's a basic, a small, relatively small piece of his content, which is talking about the structure that you would have for a coaching session. And you know what? I will absolutely just share that with you. So I actually have tweaked that for myself. So really it's kind of become my own anyway. So I'll just teach you that. Let me just write that down.
Awesome. Thank you.
Okay. Good. This is a great question. I love it. And you asked about the disclaimer and the contract and that kind of thing where you were just starting to talk about there a second ago. That is extremely important, and I know that having that disclaimer feels detracting to what he's doing. I know what you're saying. It is important to do, and I just believe, obviously, you guys both signed a user agreement to work with me on this, and I think it's just always in business a really good idea to have everything in writing, no matter what a great friend that person is to you or anything. In fact, the more close the relationship, the more you probably should have it in writing. Because it just sets clear expectations. And, you know, here's what I'm delivering. Here's what you're giving me in exchange for delivering that. And here's the time frame. And here's what you're responsible for and I'm responsible for. And, you know, people that do coaching and give advice, there is something that's called, and Kim, you're going to know this from what you do, probably from the insurance that you've had to buy. There's something called errors and omissions insurance. For example, where if you do like the hands-on work that I used to do and that Kim is doing, and you're advising people on their papers that they should throw away and all that kind of stuff, right? You become liable there for the advice that you're giving. And so you need to protect yourself that way. And so you can, you know, I don't mind if you model off whatever I've got on my user agreement. The thing is, you should always have that checked by your own attorney for your state and your situation and all that. So, you know, I have to say I'm not giving legal advice because I'm not an attorney. I have taught paper management skills for years, and every single time I do that, I tell them that disclaimer. I'm not an accountant or an attorney, and if you have specific questions about papers you want to throw away, you're going to need to ask those people. But I will give you the general idea. And I'll tell you what we usually do, but yeah, you got to protect yourself. You also asked me a related question, which was when should I incorporate? How should I incorporate? That's legal advice, but I will tell you the general thing. So, you know, I'm not an attorney, but most people that I know in business today are doing LLCs.
Okay. That's and what Kim, I think
I'm sure y'all have, are you an LLC, Kim?
Yeah, it's in my name. Downsize My Home LLC.
Yep. And the reason is for liability. That is the reason. So you just don't want someone to be able to go after your personal assets if they sue you. And, you know, here's something to think about with lawsuits nowadays. My friend has a beautiful ranch in Texas here a couple of hours away. I've been going there since I was a child. I've known this woman since I was 6 years old. No kidding. So 40 plus years we have been friends, and every single time I go to the ranch, I still have to sign a waiver. And I do. And it's not because she thinks I'm going to sue her. The problem becomes that people's insurance companies sue on your behalf. So, you know, like if I'm injured on the ranch and I file a claim for my whatever insurance, right? You know, they're going to say, well, that's the ranch's responsibility. So we're going to sue to recover our money to pay you. And it has nothing to do with me having a vendetta against my friend or not being nice or whatever. It's not even personal. It's my insurance company that's going to do the suing. So that kind of thing is, even between the closest friends, necessary in this day and age. So that's why in business, yeah, protect yourself as much as you can. I will give you a resource. It is called, I'm saying Zoom in my head, but I'm like, we're talking on Zoom right now. Hang on, let me think of what it is. Oh, it's LegalZoom.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Okay.
LegalZoom.com is a terrific resource for almost everything that you would need as a simple business and personal life, kind of, you know, like the three of us probably are in that category. Like my friend who has this ranch, she has all these properties and she's got a lot of wealth in her family. LegalZoom does not work for her. But, mm-hmm. you know, for people to do a simple will, simple incorporations, simple trademark filings, things like that, LegalZoom is an outstanding resource. I even for years subscribed to their monthly thing where I think it was like $15 a month where you can have access to answer questions whenever you need to with a real attorney. And I used it a few times and it was worth it, because if you add up for a year, what's $15 a month for a year, and then you think what you'd pay for 1 hour for an attorney.
Yep.
You know, so yes. That's a really cool resource. And I would say that you should do that pretty soon as far as when.
Okay.
As soon as you have something to sell, I think it's good to set it up that way. And that way you've got, you know, whatever you're selling, whatever outcome you're promising from that offering is, you know, part of the, what, you know, you're now starting to make a promise to someone that you're going to deliver something, right?
That's actually one of the first things that we did when I created my product, and even before, just before we even created a website, we did the LLC.
Yeah, I agree. And it's good to do it sooner than later, because, you know, as you're purchasing all the things that you need, like you said, creating the website or whatever, it can all be in the name of the corporation instead of having to move that over. But, you know, I know that you're already operating under your sole proprietorship and you're doing a lot there. So as far as what's the line in the sand, to me, the line in the sand really is when you create that product. But yeah, the sooner the better. I totally agree, Kim.
Okay. That's really helpful. Thank you both for that. And Kim, Lori, you have a number of different sort of brand names, but you're LoriMarrero.com. Kim, I looked at your site the other day when you sent the link, and I can't remember the exact domain name, but did you do an LLC under your own individual name, or did you?
It's Downsize My Home LLC, and I put in time in the sole officer, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
In that LLC.
Okay.
I'm going to draw it up.
Okay.
Because when we first created it, in Missouri, where we used to live, we had officers. We had more than one person under the LLC. In Texas, it's so bizarre. I guess you have to jump through different hoops, or you have to be an S Corp or something, but they pretty much require you to be a sole, have a sole membership, which is really not much more than a DBA.
So. I'm drawing this little diagram for you guys.
But you should check with either LegalZoom or check with your CPA. Your CPA could help you. You know, anything like that.
So, okay, that's a good idea. I'm working with one right now because I've been the executor on an estate for the last year, and we're getting ready to wrap up, and I have many things to talk with him about, including my own taxes, so I'll ask him about that. It's a good idea. Thank you.
So when I started out, I had a situation that made sense for, you know, the time. This was 17 years ago, with you know, I was married to my ex-husband now at the time, and we got advice that said we should do an S corporation at that time, and it was fine, and it still works for us. So I do have an S corporation, but if I were to start over today, I would do an LLC, just because of what I've heard from a lot of people, and it's different actually now than when I started. So I know LLC has changed. There used to be a requirement that you have multiple partners in it, and I think now a single person can own an LLC. I think that's true. Mm. Something like that. So
that's interesting because I have thought about developing, as I develop different offerings underneath the Downsize My Home brand, to call it something else. You know, I've had people that have, I think, Lauren, you and I talked about this, that have criticized the fact that I'm putting the word downsize in my company name because they say it's negative. But I'm keeping it because it is such a strong word. You know, like I said, people don't go around and go, I'm going to right size. I'm right sizing right now. Oh, I'm right sizing my mom. No, they say I'm downsizing. Everybody talks about it. Everybody.
Yeah, I understand what that point, the point is that person's making about the negative connotation, but I also think some people think it's a positive connotation. When I hear downsizing, I go, ooh, nice.
Organizer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear freedom. That's what I hear. Mm-hmm. Lightening the load.
But then when I'm thinking about, okay, if I am expanding this, or when I expand this to corporations or whatever, you know, those other markets, what do I need to call myself? I'm already starting to think about all that. It's a little confusing.
Yeah, so this is what I was drawing here for you. Can you see that little whiteboard thing that popped up?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm experimenting with that because what I also heard is that Zoom will do, and actually Brandy and I tried to test this out, Zoom will actually do a thing where you can like hook your iPad up to it somehow, and then you can use your iPad stylus to draw, and I'm going to rather do that, but this was good. There's a whiteboard feature in Zoom.
Beautiful.
Oh, thank you. But yeah, what I would love to explain to you here is about what I call the umbrella brand. So a lot of people who end up with a personal brand, and if you have been an entrepreneur in the past and have any inclination of creating anything new in the future, this is probably the model you want to have in your head. And you can see what it is here. So you are the umbrella brand, and you're going to create things. So the first company I ever created was called Living Order, which was my service business, very similar to what Kim is doing. You can imagine snipping this off, right? And so this becomes its own baby somewhere else. Like this becomes something else for somebody else, or it doesn't exist anymore, or whatever happens, right? And then you can sell it, or you can, you know, what I did was license it back to the employees or whatever. But you can snip these things off, and, you know, this could be sold, or, you know, this is the brand of what I created this program under and the event that I did, but this is all under my name. So it can be different, you know, if you have a different kind of product and setup. So you've got Kellogg's, and they've got sub brands of Frosted Flakes and Sugar Smacks and whatever, right? So those are all brands on their own, but Kellogg's is the big umbrella brand for them. And it kind of just depends, right? So you've got General Motors, and then under General Motors, you've got, I don't know what they make, Fiat. I don't remember who makes what, but you see what I'm saying. You can look at it in slice of different ways, but mainly for people like us, we have a personal brand. This is kind of the model. And then just think about the exit strategy and how to snip off or transition each of those when you're ready to transition, if you do. So Eileen, for you, we were talking about this on our initial call, I remember, because you were talking about having the URL of your name. I really believe that everybody should own the URL of their name if possible. And so, Kim, I don't know if yours is more of a standard name, if you need to do it like Kimberly with your two E's.
Well, I have kimstanley.com.
Oh, good.
I haven't thought about doing Kimberly Stanley.
That's okay. You have kimstanley.com. Perfect. That's all you need. I figured someone else had grabbed it before you.
They had. There was a Remax agent. This was when I was a Remax agent in Missouri. Remax agent in Gainesville, Florida, who was blonde. You had it. And one day it popped up. This was after, you know, all the financial crap went on. And I guess she went out of business. And my husband, Jack, found it. And he said, oh, I've got it. I said, get it. So I've had it for about, 7 years.
Okay. And the thing is, even if you do nothing with it, the fact that you own it and you have the option to do that because it's your name, then good. You should have it. So if you can't get the .com, get whatever you can that's best, you know, .net or anything else. There are, by the way, so many domain endings now besides .com that you can use. So my friend has a .life, you know, that's interesting, right?
So, yeah, I just heard of .energy, which was kind of cool. Mm-hmm.
I didn't mean to interrupt.
That's okay. Go ahead.
I was always told, .com is golden and you need to get that. Mm-hmm. My business name is .biz, which back when I got it was the only other thing besides .net or .org that you could get. Mm-hmm. And I thought about that too, but I've had it for so long that at this point in time, doing something else, I'm not sure if it makes sense, but that's a part that I don't quite understand is .com still so golden that you have to have it?
Well, ideally, if you can have the .com, you should have it. I mean, if there's any possible way to tweak your name where, a friend of mine I shouldn't say her name for confidentiality reasons right now, but.
Well, you can put dashes, I guess, in between or, lowercase, that type of thing.
Or you can add some word to the end of it. So if it's, let's just say I didn't own expertvisibility.com, which I do. I don't have anything going on with that site right now because we are just directing people to my name website. But expertvisibility.com, if that wasn't available, I could say expertvisibilityonline.com or something like that, right? So there's ways to get around it. You still have to make sure people remember that. And the dashes can be a bad idea, again, for the radio purposes, right? So you don't want to be on the radio going, this dash, that, hyphen, blah, 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 blah.
I agree. People don't do that.
I think .biz is very known now, and I think the only danger of all these new domain things like .life and whatnot is that people kind of are unsure about it. They're like, wait, .life.com? So I know people still think .com, it goes to the end of everything, especially older people. So that might be actually a consideration for you, Kim. And I don't know if you may not know this, or maybe you do. Like, I'm not sure who is searching for your business, Kim. Is it the children, typically, the younger people that are involved in the project, or is it the person who's actually doing the downsizing that's going to be trying to find you?
It's the children or is it the adult child or the influencer, the sales director at the senior community or, that type of thing.
Okay.
But it's usually, women 40 to 60.
Okay. Well, no matter who it is, we think first.com just because of the way things have always been. And I think that, you should always try to get that if you can, or engineer the name in a memorable way where you still can use .com at the end. We actually have some content on that later, by the way. I have some suggestions for you.
Okay. Great. I think there's I think you can buy, my experience has been that if I thought of a good domain name, I'll just buy it because there you can get them for like $11 a shot or something like that, sometimes even cheaper. Because I need to, I purchased arothwell.com 14 years ago, but I've never purchased aileenrothwell.com. But if you're thinking big now, then you need to go buy all of the variations of that, whether you ever use them or not, just so that, I've also seen politicians who didn't do that and they've had their they've had it used for purposes that weren't that were opposite of what they were after, I guess is what I want to say. So.
I know what you're talking about. That's funny.
And
that goes back to what we talked about with protecting your intellectual property. We are also going to talk more about that later too. But that does pertain, because do you want a competitor who is a kind of cutthroat type person to redirect something to something you don't want to do?
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, to me, okay, so your last name is a just lovely last name, nothing wrong with it. Putting the W in front of it the way it's spelled might be confusing for people. I just think you have, if you could get Eileen.com, I don't know. I mean, I think AI is typically not the way people think of spelling it. A lot of people think EI, right?
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if it's unique enough, you know, maybe you could actually get Eileen.com the way it's spelled.
Maybe. Right. I'm going to check. I'm going to find out.
It would be cool if you can be on a, you know, like a simple one word basis with people whenever possible. That's really the best, right? So we've got Madonna, we got Cher, we got Prince, you know, like everybody that's really, really big has one name.
Oh, that's funny. Well, I heard someone, another coach years ago told me that I should think of myself as Aline Inc. And this is, you know, when I was still very much in like the corporate employee climbing sort of place. And she thought that, you know, everyone should think of themselves that way, you know, as a product. And so that just brought me back to that. So I'll look into it for sure. You guys have given me some really great ideas and I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Well, let me finish answering those questions that you sent me about the contract, the LLC kind of thing. And again, I'm not an attorney, but it's, you asked me what are the advantages and disadvantages of having my spouse as part owner of the business.
Yeah.
You said also to complete that, if you're employing Dennis's videography and chef experience for the retreats and whatnot, would it make more sense for him to be part owner, an employee, or a vendor? So I'm thinking about QuickBooks, right? So this, we're going to talk about this when we get into the letter P, that's for practices. We're going to talk about, okay, what, you know, practices, processes, procedures, things like that, that need to be in your business. And QuickBooks is something I'm going to almost insist upon for everyone. I think if you're serious in business, that QuickBooks is needed. Kim, do you use it already?
Do I use, I'm sorry, what?
QuickBooks.
Yeah, I just hired a bookkeeper. I started using QuickBooks. I bought it and then I hired somebody to set it up and then didn't use it. And now I'm saying I've got to become a real business. And so I'm set up. I'm still, in fact, I have a meeting with my bookkeeper tomorrow to go over things and go, okay, as a business owner, what do I need to look at when? And what do I need to do to keep my finger on the pulse of this business? But I didn't have it for, you know, for the first several years. So not that that's a good idea, but I didn't.
That's okay. So when we're talking about thinking big, you know, think big now, this is a piece of it, because, you know, I don't know anybody who's going to go to a business broker someday and say, I want to sell this business, or, you know, some company like Rubbermaid is going to acquire this business or whatever's going to happen, right? That is not going to expect that QuickBooks be part of that business package, that they're buying a company that thinks big accounting already, right? And QuickBooks is amazing because it can accommodate a small business, no problem, but it grows with you. And so really, if we're thinking about mindset, if you're expecting to grow, then why would you not have QuickBooks? Because of course you're going to need it. Yeah, and so I like QuickBooks Online. I resisted that for a long time. For years and years, we've used QuickBooks as a software installation on our hard drive. And then we just recently converted this at the end of 2016 to the QuickBooks Online in the cloud. And it's much better because you can let your accountant log in remotely, and there's not this one file. And what if you make changes to that file and it's a different version and all that jazz, right? But QuickBooks will accommodate employees and payroll, and you know, your reporting is better. And if someone, again, is going to buy your business in the future, or they're looking at you to partner a certain way and they ask you for a profit and loss statement, and you're not going to be able to do that with your online banking, and you're not going to be able to do that with Quicken necessarily either. So there's my pitch for QuickBooks. So when I think about your question, and I think about QuickBooks, my general thought, again, this is not from an attorney, but Dennis is going to have, you know, his stuff that he's doing over here. And I feel like from an accounting standpoint, it's better for Dennis's books to be separate. And then you, when you do retreats, even if you do them multiple times a year, it might even be to your financial advantage to have the two different entities be contractors and vendors of each other. And so you probably want to ask your attorney or think about, as far as the part owner conversation, I don't actually know anything about the answer to that.
Well,
also,
On an online version of QuickBooks, you can have up to five different businesses. So we have an umbrella QuickBooks account, and Jack has his real estate business on it, and then I'm another classification with my home. Eventually, I will grow to the point where I'll just transfer for that all over to my own QuickBooks, but right now, it's the most cost-effective.
Good.
You can look into all that, and they'll explain it. If you go online and, you know, click on QuickBooks.com or whatever it is, they'll tell you.
Okay. Okay. That's wonderful info. Thank you. And just really quickly, I want to let you guys know that I did a search on Aileen.com, and it is it's not available. It looks like somebody's trying to auction it off, so I'm not doing that. But what is available is Aileen.store and Aileen.online, which I actually think sounds kind of cool, Aileen.online. So I'll just throw that out there.
That's good. If you're in there, if they have Aileen. Do you say Aileen or Aileen? I didn't ask you.
It's I answered all of them. My name is pronounced Aileen. But so many people say if my mom is saying it, it's going to have that hard A on it, because she's usually trying to get my attention. It's going to be Aileen. So all of that is fine.
Okay. Well, so you said Aileen, right? Like just a short A. Okay. So if you can get Aileen.tv right now, get that. And this is going to be in a future module, but I'll just say it now.
Okay.
That is a brilliant strategy to redirect to your social media and have it be more memorable, and you can control it. So I have Lori.tv, right? So whenever I tell someone to watch my videos, I tell them Lori.tv. Now, what's been cool is I used to have a name for my YouTube channel the channel was called Clutter Diet. And then when I decided, you know, I want to go up on this whole umbrella brand idea and really brand myself as a personal brand and the umbrella concept, I needed to change the name of my channel. And I changed it. So if everybody out there was going to the old YouTube URL, / Clutter Diet, well, they would not find me anymore. But because I have been using Lori.tv for a long, long time, that has been simple for me to just go into my domain manager. I use GoDaddy, you know, but you can use whatever you buy, wherever you buy domains. You just do a simple redirect in there and just tell it, you know, when someone goes to this website, it's an alias for this other URL.
Oh, that's smart.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
You talked about Umbrella Inc. I want to understand that concept better.
So the thing I drew on the whiteboard, that's what I'm talking about.
That's the umbrella in you're talking about. Okay.
Yep. So your name, your personal brand is the umbrella over all the creations that you have. And whenever those creations are, you know, transitioning away, however that happens, closing, selling, whatever they're doing, you can snip them off and it's still all you, you know. So
the image that you used that stuck with me was that you can snip them off like Christmas ornaments. Like, that just stayed with me.
Yes.
That's exactly how I'm going to envision it. It's great.
Okay, cool. Well, yeah, so I have learned something about doing these alias URLs. So I bought LoriFacebook.com, LoriInstagram.com, and then I did Lori.tv a long time ago. And here's what I learned. I actually got legal, not in legal trouble, but I got an email from Instagram, from their legal department. And this was just a few weeks ago that this happened to me. And I was very... I was irritated about this because, but they said, yeah, you can't, they found out that I own LoriInstagram.com. And what that URL does is it redirects my Instagram page, which if you go to it now, it won't because we had to take it down.
Right.
But you know, there's nothing to me wrong with that. Because I'm just sending traffic to their page a different way. You know, like
it's the same way that I have on my Gmail, I have KSS Realtor. And at one point in time, people were like, oh, Kim, you're going to get in so much trouble. Well, they never found it. But Realtor is a trademarked name.
Yes.
You know, that the National Association of Realtors, because otherwise you have to call yourself a real estate agent.
Yes.
I didn't know that at the time. And I thought KSS, that's my initials, you know. Blah. But yeah, so that's how I learned about that. So I would imagine it's the same thing with Facebook or Instagram.
So Facebook, there's sometimes in business and in life where you ask forgiveness, not permission, right? So I'm still using LoriFacebook.com, and I'm really glad because I have changed where I send people now. So I used to send people to my Clutter Diet page. Now I'm sending people to a page that is just me, you know. So as you change and decide what you're going to snip off and do, you might want to change the page that you send people to. So I think the strategy is still valid. You just need to be aware that there could be an issue, and definitely don't go with Instagram because they are on it. And I argued with them. I wrote them several emails back and forth. I'm like, look, I just went to Target. Here's a picture. I was mad. So I'm in Target. There's this display in Target from Maybelline, and it's got the Instagram logo on their display. And I'm like, look, everyone has your Instagram logo on their website. Everyone has your name and your logo everywhere because they're saying, I'm on Instagram, click it and go there. There is no difference between my URL sending people to your site and someone having your icon on their site to send them to their page too. You know, and they wrote back and they're like, we understand what you're saying, but our user agreement says. And it was like, oh, okay. So, wow. You know, I had my say and I had a really excellent point, but they just didn't want me to do that. So, like, look, I'm not setting up a competing product for Instagram. I'm trying to make my own Instagram, but, they definitely just put the hammer down on it. So, you know, whatever, it was not threatening. It was just like, no, we really need you to stop. So, that's my lesson on that. So just be aware that could happen, but I think Facebook is fine. They've never noticed anything. And it just, to me, it gives you a lot more control over long-term over your message of where you're sending people. So you don't have to go and redo links and stuff like that. So yes, .tv is always great for your YouTube channel. Okay. Let me go back to your other questions. So Kim, you sent, let me look at some of your stuff that you just sent. So let me share with each of you what you came up with your top morals or values. So Kim's are accomplishment, simplicity, vision, perseverance, and abundance. And so what's cool is you both have in common abundance. Mm-hmm. And Kim's, Aline's were, let me get over there. Abundance, courage, growth, integrity, and kindness. So awesome. It's so hard to choose. Wasn't it hard to choose?
It was amazingly hard to choose. So this is now, but I reserve the right to change it.
Mm-hmm. Of course. And you probably will. You probably will because you will grow and evolve as a person. And but I find the exercise very valuable because what that is a touchstone for decision-making moving forward in everything. Really, if you go back to, you know, does this decision reflect abundance? Does this decision reflect integrity? Yeah, it has to, you know, you're not going to feel right about whatever you're doing. So it's just a wonderful touchstone. For years in my life, mine have been truth, health, and growth. And it's like, for me, everything boils down to those three things. So, you know, whether it's my personal life or my business, truth, health, and growth just completely are embodied in there. And then if you go into, you know, my brands and my businesses, there would be different ones like simplicity. There you go. There's one for Clutter Diet, right? But I've just stuck with my top three for me, and that's been what I've used as the touchstone. But I'm thrilled that you went through the exercise, because I think it's such a great thought, you know, a thought exercise for you. So let's see. And then I want to see what you wrote for your mission statement. Okay. Downsize my home empowers people to make good decisions about what is most important for the next stage in their life by providing an easy to follow system and resources for every step of a downsize move. Awesome. You're very specific about exactly what you do, and you're empowering people, and it's about decision making, which we know. And in this industry, what I'm always telling people is, you know, clutter is delayed decisions and delayed actions. Like, yeah, period.
It's a mouthful, though. I wish I could pare it down, but I've been working on this for a while. It's hard, but the word empower really rings true, and it positions me uniquely because I go to tons of senior networking events around the area, and nobody gets up and says, "I empower people." They get up and they say, "I help people downsize." Well, whatever the heck that means. You know, I help them make a move, or I am I am a relocation specialist. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't get to me. It keeps it on the task level. And what I want to do and what I try to communicate is that we want to go deeper than that. We want people to walk away with feeling the essence of what this really does for them.
Absolutely. I love the word empower. And it's such a great illustration of the power of choosing the right word, because you could just say help. We help people, you know. But yeah, empowers is such a strong word. And, you know, Eileen, as a writer, you know, exactly, like, if every word matters. So that is awesome. Yeah. So I was going to jump in here and read you what I wrote for my thing here. I have been mentoring with this guy, Russ Rifkin, now, who helped me put all this together to even offer this to you today. And this is where I've been working for months and months to get to where we are right now, which is a really good thing. But he had us do a mission statement. So here's mine. I teach busy experts and speakers how to attract bigger audiences and land strategic media and partners by showing them how to build a memorable, world-class, polished brand and convert compelling content like courses, videos, books, and social media posts into millions of dollars in sales and media coverage. Bam, you know? So it can be a long sentence like that.
And yours is a lot of words too, but they're all very, like I was writing some of them down, memorable, world-class. Those are awesome.
Yeah, here I'll paste
that. There was also a lot of, there's the how in there too. Which is,
specific.
You know, it's very specific. And it also weeds out people. So people can self-select out of that too, because it's not for everyone.
Yes.
You just wrote it in the chat?
I did. I just chatted it.
Oh, good. Because I want to put that up there, because that's my goal for this class. And I haven't, you know, my husband said, well, you need to write down, you know, as Tony Robbins says, RPM, your result, yep. Whatever the other P and M is right now, but, you know, what you want out of this class. And I said, I know what I want, but this says it so excellently.
Thank you. Well, I purposely didn't give you that yet as an example, because I wanted you guys to come up with something organically, and I wanted it to come from you and what you felt you needed. And then I wanted to give you this as this, not really model, but like there's an example that could also be similar to what you're doing. So both of yours are fantastic, and you're going to refine them, because that's how it works. I mean, as we continue through the content and all that, you're going to be thinking of, you know, I need to add this in, I need to tweak this, I need to make this word better, whatever. But the exercise of starting here and really getting the foundations built is so important. And I thank you for taking me seriously and doing the work, because some people just go, well, yeah, but like, what am I going to call my book or whatever, you know? So, you know, you've got to start here with the vision and the why and the mission. So thank you.
What is yours, Aline?
Oh, yeah.
My mission statement?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's see. I don't think I have that document open. Lori, do you have it in front of you? Sorry.
Yeah. And I read it earlier, and I'll read it one more time because maybe I didn't make it clear that's what I was reading. So this was your summary statement. My mission is to inspire people who have the willingness to change to also have the courage and stamina to create a life they love.
Okay. Yes. I do remember hearing that. I didn't know that was your...
Yes. And I love that, because the word inspire is a really powerful word. Also, you made a distinction of the willingness to change, because you can only work with, you know, like you were saying about mine, it's who you will and won't work with. There it is. It's clear. You've got to work with people who want to change, who are ready.
Yeah. Wishing for a different life is, at least for me, it's never worked. So it's a lot easier if folks are willing. But I do anticipate refining it. I had worked on that one for a while, a few months ago, and I did this whole exercise, just as background, I did this whole exercise to see if it resulted in something else. Like, I left it open to see what else might come out of it, and it came out the same. But I, you know, as we go forward, I'm open to refining it more and, you know, learning from both of you. I just welcome the input.
Well, terrific. So what I would like to recommend is, if you guys don't mind, if you want to do that, you know, we're doing everything via email right now. If you just want to copy each other on everything and read each other's stuff, and you don't have to do it. And certainly if everyone doesn't have time to read everyone else's stuff, that makes total sense. But if you guys want to know that about each other and share, like, it's some of the stuff you've written here is just brilliant. Like, I think that Kim might enjoy reading it if you want to share all of that. But so I love this sentence right here. I offer the perspective, and this is the why for her audience. Why do they care about what I'm doing? What do I provide them? You know, this is just part of what she wrote here. But I offer the perspective of lived experience and life changes after 40 in a way that is smart, fresh, fun, friendly, whimsical, inviting, adventurous, welcoming, vibrant, bold, brave, thriving, juicy, authentic, grounded, transcendent, glittering, genuine, zesty, I love that one, soulful, alive, glowing, funky, and sparkling. You know, so it's like... That paints such a wonderful picture. And she also mentions in this that she shared those adjectives with her graphic designer in the creative brief for designing her mark, which I am thrilled about, which we are going to study. And I'm going to give you my template for a creative brief. So maybe you can, refine your creative brief even more with what we're going to talk about.
I imagine we will.
Yes.
Wonderful.
So let me go back to Kim's stuff, since we are just getting down the road with her homework here. Your goal for your lifestyle design is to be a national spokesperson for my niche of downsizing, have a positive impact on organizations that serve seniors and their families, and provide new solutions for repurposing discarded belongings. Ooh, that's an angle that we hadn't really talked about very much, Kim.
That is an inspiration I have just been coming up with in the last few days and few weeks. And I'm actually meeting with someone after this session to talk to her about not being in charge of it, but kind of, you know, taking that and maybe running with it. And my husband has been talking about that. He's came up with this idea of let's have a store called Nothings. And we take stuff in and stuff that we paid nothing for, and then we repurpose it and recreate it into this funky new style. And I've been thinking about this for a while too, because we come across so much of this furniture that not even Salvation Army wants. You know, mm-hmm. the reason doesn't want. There's just an overabundance out of it, and it just makes me sick to think, where is this going to end up in? And but if we could recreate it, you know, by taking some of it apart, adding some cool hardware from other pieces of stuff, you know, like what comes to my mind is Toy Story and that evil kid who created those. but not evil, but, you know, taking parts and making, and it's not that it's a totally new concept, but it's the taking of all this stuff and, you know, all this stuff that other people take, but creating something like a new trend, a new fad, and a repurposed fad, and then selling it for a lot more money, because it's going to take a lot of work to take apart furniture and recreate it. And I thought, I kept going off on this direction, going, what if we used homeless people or women in shelters or people who were disadvantaged to work in these, but to create these things, and we gave them jobs and did it as a nonprofit. And, you know, so I mean, this has been a new creation in my head that I've been doing, but I have so many people in the last week, I have had 3 emails from people who said, I don't need help in downsizing. I need somebody to come over and tell me what to do with this stuff. And what is it? Is any of it worth anything? And there's a gal that works with me that is amazing. She knows everything about everything. She brings her little jewelry scope with her, and she has found jewelry that people thought was junk that's 18 karat gold and diamonds and worth a lot of money. And they were going to give it to Goodwill, or they were going to, you know, she's found paintings that were sitting on the shelf in Goodwill that were worth 5 figures. She just knows stuff.
That's awesome.
And so I've got 3 jobs for her, going out and just spending a couple hours in people's homes, going through their stuff that they don't want, and saying, this, not establishing value like an appraiser, but saying, this has value, this does not, this has value, this does not. And trying to know what to do with their stuff. But the stuff that doesn't have value, but still is reusable, like the old coffee table or the hutch that nobody wants. It drives me crazy. You know, and working with this hoarder has just magnified this whole thing. So that's the other thing. That's why I added that. And I never had that before.
That is really interesting because, okay, so first of all, you might want to consider in your vision just, let me back up a second. So one of my most influential mentors is Brendan Burchard. Have both of you heard of who he is?
I love him. Yes. I love him.
I was very, very fortunate to get in early with Brendan in his career and work very closely with Brendan. And I was in his mastermind groups, and he knows me, and he uses me as an example on stage, and he put me in his book and all kinds of stuff. It's pretty great. One of the things Brendan says is when he talks about partnering, I learned a lot from him about partnering. He says, you know, you can be an entrepreneur. You can stand out there and you could try to create a train system, right? So you could buy the railroad ties and you could pound them down, and then you could get some track and you could lay the track, and then you could go find an engine somewhere, and then you could do that and whatever.
Create the wheel.
Yep. Or you could stand on the side of a track and watch this big old train that's already got momentum running by, and you stand there with a hook and you just throw that hook on and catch on to that train that's already moving.
Yeah.
And that's a way better strategy, right? So knowing the hook on the train strategy, that's the power of partnering, which we will have a whole module on. But you know, a lot of people are unclear about what Goodwill does, which is a challenge. And I've been their spokesperson for 7 years, and we still struggle every day with how do we message all of their things they're already message around Goodwill. But you know, they have, and this is not in every agency, but mostly they have a zero waste goal. So like here in Austin, Kim, they will take apart if you give a coffee maker to them that doesn't work. They test it. If the coffee maker doesn't work, then they will rip it apart and they will strip the copper wires out and they'll sell it to the copper vendor and they will recycle the plastic and they will recycle the glass, and they have a zero waste goal that they're very close to.
Yeah, that's really interesting because I have been wanting to go tour, but I haven't known who to talk to. And I think I might know somebody who has some connections with Goodwill, but.
Well, I'll tell you what, locally, here's what you do. We have in the Austin Goodwill, in fact, I was very instrumental in creating this tour, and I used to lead the tour. So I know very well what they're doing over there. It's the Real Goodwill Tour. So just go to the Austin Goodwill website, and you can find the Real Goodwill Tour, and then you just make a reservation for it. It's free. But they will tour you through. There's two phases of the tour. One is at this main facility over off 35. And then the second tour that you can register for after you've gone through the first one is they take you to the recycling center, which is the GRC, Goodwill Resource Center, on Burleson over here. And they have this gigantic warehouse, and they have signs hanging down from the ceiling to show you what section of this is where we have, you know, computer monitors, and this is where, you know, and it's this amazing place to tour. But yeah, that's where you would learn this. But on a local level, definitely do that. It's fascinating just in general. Everybody who walks out of there says one thing the same, and they say, I had no idea. Just they had idea.
I feel I use Goodwill, but I feel like I'm throwing this into a black hole, and in the back of my mind, I'm always wondering, where is this going? Where is it besides the store? Because mm-hmm. we all know I get a bunch of junk, and where is this all going? So anyway, yes. I don't mean to get off topic, this has been, I'm getting calls all the time, and there's national auction houses that will come in and cherry pick things. And then mm-hmm. the client is left with the stuff that they don't want. And then they go, well, I guess I'll just, you know, take it to Goodwill, or I'll tell them to donations. And well, I'd like to have options or other options or know enough to be able to,
Well, so your vision of having a thing where people can repurpose or whatnot, if you did partner with Goodwill, and the reason I just brought the whole thing up was they've already got, you know, the stuff, a lot of the stuff that you would add to, but they also have the population of disadvantaged people who you could employ and use in that capacity where you're describing. So have that as a vision for the future, and that you could hook onto that train instead of reinventing all that.
That's great. And that's something I've reluctantly come to because I don't really want to do it. Mm-hmm. I don't really want to be about that. I've been trying desperately to avoid having to deal with, like, I don't have an estate sale company because of that. That's a lot of hard work. Mm-hmm. But yet I see the tremendous need, and I'm being asked to do something about it. Mm-hmm. So anyway.
Kim, there's I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to mention that I actually have a couple of pieces of furniture in my house right now from a local company that I think they call themselves, their purpose is upcycling. Mm-hmm. And now I can't remember their name. They're tiny, and they're in one of the tiny towns in southern New Mexico near here. And my mom insisted on getting this thing, which is really cool. I wouldn't have bought it, but it was a gift. And it's like they took two old fashioned chairs, then reworked them together. So they create a bench, and then they did a different finish on them. You know, another is kind of like a wacky table that, you know, has one leg but attaches to the wall. And they've taken, you know, they take parts and pieces of different furniture and turn it into something utterly different that actually has, you know, purpose. It has form and function. And so I was thinking you were going to say that you wanted to partner with a designer to do that, but it sounds like really you just want to offer the service or the possibility or partner with someone who would do it, which is also very cool, but not just throwing it in the landfill.
Yes.
No, and making it something because we live in the land of millennials. You know, there's all these minimalist millennials. I mean, the problem is even worse here because there is no market. In some places, the place I moved from, there was a market for antiques or old furniture. The younger people, there were enough collectors in Austin. There is no market. There are few collectors, but not very many. And mostly, there's millennials because of all the tech industry, and they want nothing, you know. So, what do you do with all
this? I'm familiar with that phenomenon, very much so.
Yes. So to create a trend that maybe that young people will go, oh, that's kind of cool. That's Austin weird, you know, or whatever it is, that maybe could have national appeal for several reasons, because it's green or greener. It serves, you know, maybe it helps society and reduces landfills. And it's cool. But it's not the primary mission. It's just because I know that it's so much on people's minds. And when they think of downsizing, they think, what am I going to do with my stuff? And I want to help with that part because I don't want to just leave them hanging.
So one of the big challenges I see, and so what I'm thrilled about, is you're doing this exercise has helped me see that you have this bigger vision and this other idea. And that is, to me, secondary to the first part of the vision. And then that's just like another add-on thing that you can do once that is, you know, established and really solid. And actually, the offerings that you are going to promote can help fund this next venture, is my vision. Is that how you kind of think about it?
I haven't thought that far ahead, Lori.
Okay.
Oh, sounds great. I wish I'd just written down everything you just said, but I guess I'll go back and play it back.
We're recording this. But the point is, I think, and you know, Eileen, I have this to say to you as well, but one of the challenges of creative entrepreneurs is that we have so many ideas, and that is a gift, and the world needs that gift, because we solve problems and we have ideas, and we are what they call a divergent thinker, right? So there's convergent thinkers and divergent thinkers. So divergent are people who have one thing, there's one thing in front of them, and they explode it into 10 different ideas, right? And a convergent person takes lots of ideas and goes, yeah, but it's really narrowed down to this. And so being an entrepreneur and a creative entrepreneur in general is more of a divergent thinking. And the challenge in that, And by the way, Kim, this goes for, I've always given this exact advice in organizing with people, when you organize creative people. So just so you can put that in your hat and use it.
It's a real challenge also.
Yeah, because here's the thing, in organizing, if somebody finds a sock without a mate and you're sorting with them and you're trying to make decisions with them, this sock, if it's a divergent thinker, they're going to be like, well, oh my gosh, I can make a sock puppet with this, and I can make a pillow and stuff it with the pillow, and I can do this, and I can make it a dust rag or whatever, right? And so that's the challenge, is to converge those things and go, yes, but here's the bottom line, is it's a sock without a mate, and you have five other ones, and da 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 da, right? So it's this decision-making process. But back to being entrepreneurs, what we have to do for ourselves is we have to acknowledge the gift in that, but we also have to rein ourselves in and do our own converging of all of that and say, look, you know, I could do a TV script, and I can do, you know, coaching, and I can write a book, and I can have videos, and I can blog, and all these things. And so the challenge is, all of those may be wonderful ideas. Some of them are going to be more feasible than others. Some of them are lower hanging fruit than others, so that they're easier to pick and get, and, you know, for it to be fruitful for you very immediately, to provide income, and then the others can either be funded by that income, or the others can just follow later when it makes more sense or whatever. So I try to think about that all the time when I work with people, because there's no end to the ideas. So we have to, you know, focus. We have our, you know, our currencies, right? So energy, time, money, and attention. We have to focus all of those on a specific outcome, one or two at a time, so that we can give it its due, you know? So to me, Kim, when I read what you've written, to be the national spokesperson, and I would say just the face of downsizing, you know, to have that positive impact on those organizations, I think what comes first in that is to build that leadership position. And then from that leadership position will flow the positive impact on those organizations and will naturally flow into the next thing for you, which, you know, will be this development of this, possibly even a nonprofit venture for you that would be a beautiful way for you to be a philanthropist in your way, right?
Well, I have been praying about, because part of the whole thing about my ultimate goal in abundance is, well, when I reach that, you know, I'm going to take some of it and go to Hawaii and stuff like that. But then I want to give back. I want to have a legacy that says, yes, hey, you know, this created this benefit for the world. And I've been praying, like, what is that? Because, I mean, I have a heart for single moms, because I was one. I have a heart for the elderly, obviously. Mm-hmm. Every time I think about that, I go, yeah, that's great, but it doesn't make my heart sing. Mm-hmm. And so what is it? So maybe something like this is it. Because I've just been asking, because of this whole course we're taking, I want to start thinking of that end game. What will this look like? You know, what will I do? Like, you know, you've hinted at some of that. That's interesting.
So look what I put on the screen, back from our training from Tuesday. So this is the big leap model of the zones of genius and excellence and whatnot. And to me, the philanthropy nonprofit idea, or the way of repurposing and your giving back idea, that's big time zone of genius stuff. And I think that what you're doing now with downsizing being your topic, it's kind of bridging between your zone of excellence and your zone of genius, because ultimately you'd like to do this higher level stuff that really serves. And downsizing is something that serves on a different level, and it's needed and it's helpful and all of that, but you really are thinking bigger and you are getting glimpses of that right now. So I feel like your evolution as a person, as a business owner, is going to be that you move through. Like for me, clutter diet is such a zone of excellence thing. I'm done. You know, like I don't have anything else to say about closets. Really don't. You know? So like I've got it there. It's running. It's fine. But you know, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing now, because this is my zone of genius now. This is where I want to serve. And I am able to take the 17 years of stuff that I've learned and really encapsulate it into this content and this way of serving. So I see you going that way with whatever that is going to look like with the repurposing idea and the way that you impact those organizations. Yeah. And so I can see you, you know, selling the business at some point and becoming an advisor to these organizations and, you know, speaking and you know, being a leader on that level. That's an amazing vision. That's so possible for you.
Yeah, that can get me up in the morning. That excites me a lot.
Excellent. Well, that's the thing. This isn't easy. You know, I would say almost every day I say this to myself: if it were easy, everyone would do it. It isn't easy. You know, this, as you point to, Eileen, in your content and your mission statement, you know, you've got to have courage, you've got to have stamina. And the why is the fuel for that. And so if you have this need to serve and you feel that it is a God-given mission, as you wrote in your statement, Kim, that's going to push you through with the courage and the stamina. But you got to have that. I do want to say something else about the Zone of Genius Excellence stuff that I have on the screen here. And that goes back to how you spend your day. So, you know, Eileen and I were talking a minute ago about her blogging, right? So we were saying you should spend less, you know, more compact time with the blogging and not have it expand too far out. And this, the Zone of Genius Excellence stuff is talking about the meaning and service that you provide in your life and what you're good at and not good at and all that. But you can also look at it from a revenue producing perspective, right? So think about the zone of incompetence as the zone of administrative work. So we will get into this as you talk about growing and delegating. In fact, I wrote about this morning or yesterday sometime on the Expert Visibility Facebook group because someone had sent me a question about that. You know, how do you know when to hire help for your business and whatnot?
Oh, yeah, I saw that one. And I thought, yeah, that's, for me, it's sooner. Sooner the better.
I actually commented on your comment or something.
I did see that, and I appreciated what you said. Thank you for doing that. I saw that. But you can think about this model in terms of what I was talking about with that person, and that is, you know, all the administrative work that maybe you even are, you stink at it, you know, like you don't like accounting and QuickBooks and all that. That's zone of incompetence stuff. And guess what? It doesn't build any revenue for you. It's all administrative. Zone of competence is stuff that, you know, it might be the indirect things that you're doing. It might be the zone of competence could be blogging for you, for example, or it could be something that is an indirect eventual revenue generator. Zone of excellence is, man, you're really good at this, and it's only you that can really do it pretty well. Like some people might be able to step in for you, but, you know, it's the stuff that, let's see, what would be a zone of excellence? You know what? Oh, here it is. Zone of excellence for me in my organizing business is that, hey, I'm really good at writing about my organizing stuff, right? Or making videos or something. I can now know that when it's time to write a newsletter or something, Brandy has worked with me for 7 years and she's incredible. I hope you guys get to know her a little bit in this process. She knows my content. She's like my second brain. So she is in that zone of excellence with me in that, oh, well, you know what? Remember that thing? Remember that video you did about this? Well, we should use that for this. Oh, yeah, that's true. So that's been able to be transferred over just a little bit to her. So she sort of knows my stuff and it's just sort of a collective knowledge that we have together. So I'm really good at it, but she's become good at it with me. And then zone of genius, that's stuff only I can do that is revenue producing directly. Like I am the only person that can get on the phone with somebody and say, hey, here's this program. Do you want to sign up with me? Right? I mean, that's very personal and it hits the bottom revenue line directly. And it's also high touch and service. And it's something that I've evolved to be able to do. So I don't know if that helps, but if you think about that as a revenue thing, as to when should I delegate, this is another way to use this model. I should delegate when things are outside those first two rings. So if it's zone of competence or zone of incompetence, probably someone else should be doing that in my business. And granted, I get it, Eileen, you have to have revenue first to be able to pay those people. So you're right. But that's what I was kind of writing.
Yeah, they like to get paid even if I don't.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the kind of thing
I'd love to. I'd love to hand off, like, you know, I'm good at building websites and administering websites and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But really, and I've earned a great living, you know, doing those things. And I don't, like, other people can do that. You know what I mean? Like, there's other people who really groove on doing that. I would love to see what life would be like if I weren't using precious time doing that. You know, how much more energy would I have to write that much more or come up with a new, you know, concept or whatever. I just realized that a lot of my time gets siphoned off in places where I can spend an entire day doing something that really, like, it's necessary for me to, you know, put my stuff out there, but it's not uniquely me. It's not unique to me. Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking, you know, forward and sort of down the road to, you know, just how soon could I do that?
Yes.
And generating the revenue to be able to do that in a consistent way too, because you can't hire someone for 1 month and go, yeah, we're going to do this. And then, you know, oops, sorry.
Yeah. Well, you know, so hiring subcontractors is really good because you can give them a project, try it out, and you know, you can keep them if they do well, and you don't have to call them back.
Exactly. That reminds me, and I'm writing it down, for our resources page, I'm going to be giving you some resources for finding those kinds of contractors so that you can try people out. There are people that are in Bangladesh or whatever that legitimately are fantastic to work with. There's a lot of ways to delegate that are very affordable. But yeah, what you're saying is you would love to delegate the sort of the web, you know, the web development stuff or whatever to someone else, because that is zone of competence stuff. That's zone of / excellence / competence, depending on who's doing it. But So that's where we're going to be getting you as soon as we can, because what we need to figure out for both of you is what is the best revenue generator that you should be focusing your money, energy, attention, and time on, so that you can get the most bang for your buck that funds everything else you're trying to do. How do you get the word out about that? How do you sell that and all that? So we're definitely focusing on that starting on Tuesday for sure with the products module. So let me see. There was something else that you wrote here that I wanted to touch on, Kim. And you know, let me tell you one of those resources right now, by the way, and I just wrote this down so it was fresh in my mind. There is something called clarity.fm, and we were just talking about all the weird domain endings of .biz or whatever. It's .fm. I have no idea why they did that, but clarity.fm is a...
radio?
Nope, and it has nothing to do with radio. I have no idea why they named it this. It makes no sense. But what it is a pool of experts on anything in business and technology that you can call upon by the minute, and they have a per minute charge. We just had a call with one of them today, and I've used Clarity many times. So sometimes you're in, let's say you use WordPress. Is that what you use, Eileen, for your website?
Yes.
How about you, Kim?
Yes, that's what I use.
Perfect. So let's just say you're in WordPress and you know, oh my gosh, I'm going to post this blog post or I'm going to change this page or something, and it just didn't work right. And all I need is if someone could just get on here with me for 10 minutes and just show me, then I'm going to be fine. But I don't need to hire someone for $2,000 a month retainer to be, whatever, right? Or if I have this very simple search engine optimization question, again, they all want to have a $2,000 a month retainer to work forever for you.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you just need 15, 30 minutes worth of, a little bit of help to teach you how to do it yourself. So Clarity FM is that. So you can get on there and search for, so like today we had somebody helping us with this problem we're having with giving you guys this membership login area. We purchased this thing. It's a plugin for WordPress. It's called Wishlist Member, and it's very highly rated and used by a lot of my mentors and whatnot. And, we just were having trouble making it work. So we found somebody on Clarity who knew how to do it, and we got on for a 15-minute thing with them, and they charge you by the minute, whatever that person's rate is. And
so like a Fiverr for technology or something.
It kind of is, yeah. But you'd be surprised what is on there, because there's some pretty high-level people that will give you consulting. In fact, I listed, you can list yourself, right? I listed myself on there if you want to talk about spokesperson work or something, and no one's ever done it, but you can list yourself.
Mm.
And you can charge whatever rate you want on there, but oh my gosh, what a valuable thing to just have someone jump on. So like this afternoon, Brandy's going to be on with somebody else who knew some WordPress question that we needed answered, and we have this guy that we've now used several times. But yeah, we can just hop on for 15 minutes and have our problem solved for $50 or whatever it is, instead of having this big commitment with someone.
Yeah.
So
that's a great resource.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm going to put that in your resources page. That's when we get that wish list thing, which we're very close to solving. We just kind of got that figured out this morning with that guy. But there will be a resources page. We'll have that and a couple others where you can hire, instead of being on the phone for the consultation with someone, you can actually hire them to do things like graphic design or whatever. Fiverr's one of them. But yes. So let's see. I'm reading Kim's thing to get back to where I was thinking I wanted to talk about something here. what we're going to be digging into when we talk more about, you know, we're filling out our 8 M's, right? So we're going to talk about market some more. We've done competitive analysis. And we are going to talk about what you're mentioning here in your why, Kim. So you say, people are overwhelmed, right? So that's one of the primary emotions that we're dealing with. So as you're thinking about the mission statement and all that, those emotional hooks are a huge deal. So I'm thrilled that you wrote what you wrote, because, you know, it's important to, when you're selling, to hook into emotional things, because people make decisions, purchasing decisions, primarily on emotion. I mean, yes, they're going to get the facts, they're going to get the prices and all that, but ultimately they're going to feel this way or that about it. And, you know, people can do that. You can use your power for good or evil, right? But so people can manipulate with people's emotions, and that's the evil side. But, you know, we want to do an ethical version of that, where we're like, we are aware of what those emotions are, and we are pulling the strings and pushing the levers and whatnot, so that they're going to make the decision to do what they need to do for themselves.
Well, in the hundreds and hundreds of people that I've talked to and asked them, you know, and said, oh, I'm going to be downsizing. I said, well, how's that going? Or how do you feel? And they all say overwhelmed. Or if I say, how was the experience? Oh, I wish I'd known you 2 years ago. I hear that all the time. Mm. And I say, well, how was your experience in downsizing your mom, or, you know, moving your mom? And the number one word that I hear is nightmare.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I've incorporated overwhelm into the title of my Lunch and Learn seminar that I give, mm-hmm. how to overcome the overwhelm of a downsized move in 3 easy steps or something like that. Mm-hmm. Overcoming the overwhelm. And the other... Then I do in my talk about that. I mentioned that that's the number one word that people say when they finished downsizing.
Wow, that is such a powerful word, nightmare, and overwhelm is a powerful word.
I was amazed. I mean, I didn't feed that information to them. It just came up, especially the one where people had to downsize their family member and had to move their family member into assisted living or into, you know, in with them or into a scene, you know, whatever it was, and how was that? And it was always a nightmare.
Wow. So you also, you mentioned a few other emotional words in here that I wanted to point out. You said they struggle. So first of all, that verb is an emotional verb. And again, we're looking for the best, most powerful words like empowers and struggle is a beautiful word. They struggle with fear of loss, guilt, and resentment. And then you mentioned also family issues, physical limitations, and lack of organization. Those are the more practical level things, but the emotional side is the fear and the guilt and the resentment. And I would urge you in your copy to always think about emotion. And you are, the people that I am trying to attract into this program with me, to work with me, are heart-centered people. This is why I emphasize that in my training and webinar thing, because I want people whose heart is in the right place and that they're going to err on the side of over-serving, you know, because that's how I am. And I think people ethically are going to end up in the right place if they over-deliver. And they love their customers. And I'm not afraid of the word love in business, by the way. I used to have a business partner a long time ago who would go, oh no, it's business, not personal. And you shouldn't be friends with your clients. And you shouldn't do that. And I'm like, no. I love my clients. And I love them in the spiritual sense of that word, where I truly want their best interest, you know. And that includes, I love myself because I want myself to be compensated appropriately, and I want to serve myself and not put myself in bad situations and all that stuff. But I have a love for everyone involved in the process, and I have love for you guys, and I want the best for you. So, you know, put that love and care and all of that into your copy, and know that when you are selling, this is a huge mindset issue for people who are like us. When you are selling, setting prices, convincing, persuading, writing copy, whatever it is, you need to understand that you are serving that person and they need you because they're gonna have all these problems if you don't help them. And they're gonna be so much better off if you help them. So the fact that you're serving them and helping them is the end goal. And yes, they're gonna pay you for that, but you should be very happy to accept that payment, you know, because it's a reciprocity thing, but like, don't be afraid to sell, because selling is serving if you come at it with the right approach. And knowing the kind of people that you are, that's how you're always going to approach it. You're never going to be a shark, you know? So trust yourself in that. Trust that you're not a shark, and trust that you're not going to come across as a shark, because you can't. You know, people's essence comes through on a, and I don't mean to sound super woo-woo or weird, I'm just saying people's essence comes through on a vibrational level. You can feel it. You know, that's why you guys agreed to work with me. You feel that my heart is in the right place, and I feel that from you. And people are going to feel that from you when they're talking to you on the phone, and when they're absorbing your content and seeing you on video and all of that. They're going to see who you are. So trust that. So, I don't know, that's my little speech for the day, but I just felt like...
Thank you for that, Lori. Thank you for that. I have to mention that for years when I was working in a kind of a different, in a different kind of fishbowl, my word for it was the Shark Tank. Mm-hmm. And then when Dennis and I met, he started calling it the Shark Tank, and I hadn't ever said that to him. And there was and I always felt like I had survival skills, you know, but it does wound your soul to be in those places where you have to strap on your armor. And it took a long time after leaving that environment to like unclench. And and so I really appreciate you saying that, and that there is, because it is, you know, for me it's not even really, it doesn't feel like selling, because it's something that you believe in, or you have confidence in, or you know it has value. But there's a lot of stuff that gets all mixed up, you know, in terms of how we think of selling and sales, mm-hmm. and sort of trying to hustle people and all of that. Mm-hmm. And that's not where I don't think any of us are coming from. No. So I just really appreciate you like saying that out loud and affirming it, because that's, you know, that's the real place that I'm living from. And it's great to know that that it does have value. You just have to find your tribe, you know?
Absolutely. So the flip side of that is, well, not really the flip side, but the other part of that is pricing. And so one of the things, Kim, that I have been thinking about since the very first time we talked is that I feel like you need to charge more for what you're offering. Mm. And, you know, there's an elasticity there, and there's what the market will bear, and all that. We're going to figure that out. But I think the other, and I guess the reason I said the flip side of the heart-centered person like this, the heart-centered business person, is that we feel bad that we can't just help everybody, right? And we tend to price our things on the low side so that everyone can afford it and we can help as many people as possible and all that. Beautiful vision, not sustainable. Right. So, you know, what we're doing has to sustain itself long term, and it has to be, in order for us to be abundant and provide and do these zone of genius things that we want to do. I can stop sharing the screen. We have to have resources to do that, and we have to feel abundance ourselves, or it's going to catch up with us. I'm going to speak from personal experience with this, and I'm just going to be really candid with you. Clutterdiet.com was inspired as the budget option for people who couldn't afford a professional organizer in person. And I'm very proud of that vision, and I, you know, where my heart was in that. And I kept getting calls in my living order business like, oh my God, I need you, and I just can't afford it, you know. Well, this was a way for me to be able to help all these people. I still priced it too low. I ended up raising it. I still could stand raising it more, because what I have developed now is a big list of people, 27,000 people on the list that we currently have. They're all budget-oriented people. And so what's hard is why you want to serve those people, and I have a lot of free content for them that will help them, they have to step up too, you know? Mm-hmm. And what it does in the long term is it causes you to have resentment for your customers. And I hate mm-hmm. saying that out loud, but I'm saying it to just speak the truth here, because I want you, Kim, when you're charging for your downsizing virtual offerings, I want you to charge enough to where you're going to feel adequately compensated so that you can keep going with it. Right now, with you guys and your investment in this program and your trust in me, I want to give you everything. And like, I'm finding that so fun for me that it just flows out. Like, I want to write emails to you like I did yesterday. Hey, here's this. And by the way, here's this microphone. Yeah. And here's this thing. And I'm just going to give and give and give because it's fair. You know, you're investing in this, and I'm going to give you all I got. But when someone's paying me $27 a month for my clutter diet program, if they're going to ask me a question, I'm going to have my arms folded and I'm going to be like, okay, well, here's this little brief answer to your question, but you're not paying me enough for me to give you any more than that. Does that make sense?
You have to manage. You have to manage your expertise. And I think the thing that I've heard people tell me over and over again, Kim, you're not charging enough. Kim, you have to establish your value proposition. And like if I ever hear that word again on the screen.
Yeah.
And I know what I have has value, but the proof of concept takes time. It's been an mm-hmm. uphill battle for me to get this proof of concept. And I've been imperfect at it, but I feel like I always finally have some momentum after doing this full time for, you know, going on 2 years. I have some momentum now. I have some proof of concept. I don't have a lot of proof of concept for the online coaching. And that's the thing I'd really like to get off the ground. So I would love to sometime have your help with that on the road. Because that's what's going to lead to me being, in my mind, being able to charge more for it. You know, I started out at $350 or something for the kit and five online coaching sessions or something like that. Half hour online coaching session.
Yes.
2.5-3 hours. And I didn't, nobody knew about it. Nobody knew what it was. And so nothing happened. And that's, you know, so this has been my struggle in going, oh, well, let me lower the price or let me get more word out or let me talk to people about it. And so far everybody goes, huh? So.
Okay, well, that's what I want to work on next Thursday when we have our Q&A. So the plan is moving forward from here. I want us to do our content on products on Tuesday, and I'll be teaching you lots of different ideas and options, and then how to create those things and what's the path to creating each of those kinds of options. So we've got a lot to talk about there, and I'm starting, of course, this week with this foundational stuff, and let's kind of get our mission down and all that. But when we go into next week with products, we're going to be talking about our model in the 8 M's, the model, the hourglass of offerings, what kind of products do people want, what can you do, what's easier. That way, when we get back on here just like this next Thursday, I want to dig in to your individual offerings and talk about that. So I want to get deep into, all right, what is in the box when you're selling the downsize program online? What are they getting? Why is it this way? What else can we do? And brainstorm with you on that and really get that to be as no-brainer as possible to say yes to. And also something that you can walk into, first of all, get a meeting with a magazine editor because it's so interesting, and walk into New York into an office building and sit down with these editors and say, this is what we do, and this is what we have. And they'll be like, wow, we want to profile this, because that topic is so hot, Kim. I mean, there's nothing but growth in this aging market that we have. And so that's why I'm so excited about what you do, because your niche of, let's call it organizing moving industry, is the growth area, and you are so ready to be that leader. And that's why you're here. So, we just need to package you up the right way.
put a bow on me.
That's right. We're going to do that. So everything we're talking about is getting you ready to walk into the, you know, to get those meetings, walk into those meetings and have something people say, wow, I want that. And my readers need to hear about that, or my whatever, my podcast guest or whoever, listeners. And so Eileen, same for you. And what we're going to do is you have no shortage of ideas, but we're going to help you figure out which ones to focus on, what's going to bring the revenue first. And, you know, how can you, you know, have an accountability assignment with us to, like, here's the first chapters of my book or whatever we decide that's going to be. You know? So
unless I write it over the weekend and then we can cross that one off the list, right?
Right, right. So that's the focus for next week is what are our offerings going to be and what are those options and how do we package them and price them and all that. That's a lot of stuff to talk about. And I'm trying to have a very leveraged situation here where you're like, oh my gosh, we've got 8 weeks. We better make these decisions. It's just like you, Kim, when you're working with someone, it's all about decisions.
Yeah.
So that's what we're trying to do together. And I'm here to facilitate that and guide that. And I'm honored to do it. But that's what to expect next week. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to read over very thoroughly everything that you sent to me. And again, the faster you can send that in, the better, so that I can, you know, if you'd want me to have read it before we get on our Q&A, then I need to have an opportunity to do that. So if you can send me whatever it is that we are doing next week, if you want me to have digested that before the Q&A, then that would be something to keep in mind. But I'm going to digest everything you just sent me, and I'm going to respond via email with a very thoughtful response, no quick replies. I'm going to really think through everything and throw out some more points for us to talk about. And we can go back and forth with that as much as you want. But that's next. And I will be so excited to see you on Tuesday to present the rest of the stuff on products on Tuesday.
Awesome.
Awesome. So do we need to do anything in addition to prepare for the Tuesday session, or we've done that and we're going to show up? I just want to make sure I'm budgeting my time and all.
You're good. And what's going to happen is after I digest everything you've mailed over to me, I'm going to write back, and then you may have some refining to do, or you may want to write back to me and we'll go back and forth a little bit on what you've been working on this week. So for the most part, we don't have like a new assignment to do until Tuesday, but it's more of, you know, we're just going to be communicating until then.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right.
And to both of you, I just appreciate, I appreciate all the, everything that you're bringing to us, Lori. And Kim, I'm just grateful that you're here too. It's, I learn a lot. Just from listening to what you're doing as well. So thank you for being so open about it.
I think we're all learning from each other, so that's awesome.
Yeah, it is. It's fantastic. So I'm grateful for you both.
Me too. And I think that's one of the big values of working in small groups is that absolutely you learn a lot from each other. You know, there's cross-pollination. I used to do my organizing work. I worked in all kinds of industries. I would go into the chemistry lab at the utility company, and then the next day I'd be working for, I worked for David Copperfield in Las Vegas, right? So I learned all this weird stuff about that business. And then I learned about this person who's a consultant to the people trying to get their drugs through the FDA process. And all of those things were so different and interesting, but what it did for me was the cross-pollination brought value to everyone else that I worked with next. So when you hear about how you do it in this industry, you can take some of that and plug it into this industry. So I'm thrilled about that for you guys. Well, wonderful.
That's great.
Thank you both.
Yep, I got to run, but it was a great session. I appreciate it. And y'all have a good weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.
Perfect.
Thanks. All right, well, you too.
You too. I'll get the recording up for you guys, and we will have news for you on the login as well very quickly. So
awesome. Okay. Thanks.
Guys.
Have a great afternoon.
You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.